Hey everybody, John here. Before we start the episode, if you could just go and subscribe, rate, review, you know, give us a little love. It helps people find the podcast. We're trying to grow our audience. We would really appreciate it. Thanks. Hello everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Moving Spotlight Podcast. Excited to be here. Shaking off some rust. It's the summertime. Yeah. I'm here, host John Ruby. I'm here with my main man,
Corbin Coyle. Hey, everybody.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Super excited for our show, which we're going to be getting to, our guest today. I'm excited to get to that. But before we get to that, Corbin, I've been doing a little bit of traveling.
Yeah, you've been everywhere.
Yeah, been all over, been on planes, and I've been trying to like bring healthy food. Mm. And I had this great thing where I went to like, Lassen's, which is like a health grocery store, and then Trader Joe's, and I tried to buy all this healthy stuff for like my son, you know, like I don't know, like seaweed chips and all, and chickpea stuff. It was all thumbs down, like nothing.
Not a fan.
Nothing could be like, my wife bought barbecue Pringles, and like that was like a winner. Course. Like yeah. Everything I brought was like, I tried. They have like these like puffed okras. I mean, that was, I couldn't even get that down. Puffed, you know what I mean? Okra. I was trying, like, yeah.
What does that taste?
Yeah,
does it taste like okra?
I don't know. It did not taste very good. So, you know, I was trying to get the healthy snacks going. You know, my topic is like fun food you've recently discovered. And so I tried a bunch of these like really interesting, weird, like kelp chips, and man, it's got a long way to go. It's in my opinion. I mean, I tried, you know, I had tons of this stuff and it was pretty rough. Have you had any fun food or not fun food?
Fun food discovered lately? I kind of did a little bit of that. It's been a bit since I've tried, because I had such a bad experience. I went to the grocery store and I was like, you know what? I want some chips. I want something a little crunchy. I want something to make me feel good, but I want it to be healthy. So I got those like kale, I forget the brand, but it's like this kale kind of thing. And I got like sour cream and onion for some reason. Like it was like a weird choice, and it was awful. It was the worst thing I've ever eaten. I like threw it out immediately, and I just wanted something healthy and good. But there are some good cauliflower kind of chips that I'm a big fan of. Those ones, usually it's hard to mess up cauliflower or something like that, because it's already a little bit on the potato-y side.
So the thing is, with a lot of those cauliflower things, I feel like you need like you need a dip. You need a hummus. You need something to dip. Yeah. That's what helps me. And like, otherwise it's so dry, you know, and I can't like bring that along. I guess I could.
Are veggie straws considered healthy? Probably not, right? Like those are pretty much just salt.
I don't think those are bad. I mean, that's the thing that happens. If you look, there's like a lot of salt in all these kind of chips to kind of preserve them. There's a decent amount of salt. I think it's easier just to like, just bring like a container with like, you know, some healthy stuff in the container, you know, some vegetables if you're trying to be healthy,
yeah,
you know,
just otherwise have a carrot. Yeah,
exactly. And then I was going to say, what's the Trader Joe's? Oh yeah, here it is. The chili and lime. Have you heard about these that are selling out all the time? Oh chili my God. Like, yeah. So my wife heard that they were sold out all the time, like from her sister. And so she had to get them. And then we were back home in Wisconsin. My parents had them. And oh my God, like the spice is just like.
Wait, what's the base? Is it cauliflower? It's like chili lime cauliflower?
No, that's not healthy. It's like, I mean,
it's like an actual chip. Oh, okay. Chili lime.
Yeah, this is an actual chip.
I gotta check that out.
But so, man, I wish I had a better recommendation. I'm trying to think if there was any. There was any winners I'd found.
Just get veggie straws. It's the best version, really.
Veggie straws, yeah. Well, I want to get to our guest. It'll be interesting to see if she's been around this summer or what she's been up to. And I know she's been doing some acting and stuff. So I want to welcome to the show actor Esther Moon. Hi, Esther.
Hello.
Hi. Hey, guys.
How you doing?
Good.
Have you had any recent food discoveries that you want to share that are a little more positive than what we've been through?
Well, you know, what's funny, you talked about that okra thing.
Mm-hmm.
I actually tried those like air fried okra chips, and I did not mind them.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
Although, you know how okra has a slight slimy texture?
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how even in the okra chip, they manage to keep that. And so like, this nice crunch. And it's all okra. It doesn't have anything else. I think I got it from Trader Joe's. So it's all okra. So you're like, okay, I'm eating like a whole vegetable. It's just air fried. And then at the end, you have this slight slimy aftertaste. And you're like, oh, well, I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
But also, like, how did they preserve that? It was, yeah. But
Esther, I was just thinking, when you said slime, did you know there used to be a fish called the slime head fish?
No.
Yeah, and they renamed it Orange Ruffy so that we would eat it at restaurants. No. Yes.
Called Slimehead.
Yes, it used to be called Slimehead. That's called rebranding, folks. Look it up.
There you go.
Slimehead fish, and then they changed it to Orange Ruffy. Orange Isn't that Ruffy. Interesting? Yeah.
So much more palatable.
So much more. Exactly. Exactly. They trick us, folks. They fool us. Yeah. They fooled us. Well, that's good. At least you found something that would be a tasty.
The more you know with John Ruby.
Exactly. Oh, the other thing I made. Wait, Esther. I did make black bean brownies.
Oh,
okay. Because yeah, I was trying to get more. Like I said, I'm trying to get more nutrition for my son. Black bean brownies. Yeah, this is a thing. This is a thing. No one ate them but me. No one ate them but me. So I mean, there was a lot. Well, there's a lot of chocolate in it. There's a decent amount of sugar, but that didn't go over either. So yeah. I'm gonna keep trying. But that was another. Yeah.
You know, with all those things, I've realized over the years, because you know, I go through phases of trying to be like healthier, and mm-hmm. you know, I do what I call a light keto and things like that.
Yeah.
But what I realize is, man, you know, any of those alternatives, it's no good. It's better to just eat the real thing, but just have a smaller, like a smaller portion of it, if that's even possible. I don't know. But yeah, black bean brownie. I don't know.
Yeah, that one, I don't know.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
There was okay. It was okay. I tried to eat as much as I could. So, all right, let's get to more important and interesting things. Esther, I want to start with kind of the big thing, which is you were in the film Minari.
Yes. Yes.
How was being a part of that film? So congratulations. That's super exciting.
Thank you. It was, I mean, it might sound so cliche, but I really enjoyed being part of that movie, just even from filming it, although it was in Oklahoma during the summer and it was so hot and humid. Mm. But I mean, even that was so fun because I had never been to Oklahoma before. We shot at an actual chicken farm and, you know, I've never been to anything like that. So, you know, just it was kind of an adventure starting from there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we shot it and, you know, when you shoot it and it's like a low budget, I mean, lower budget, right?
Yeah.
And so you just don't know where it's going to go. So you shoot it, you have fun, you know, the cast was great. Steven is just the nicest guy. Mm-hmm. And so you shoot it and then you just kind of, you know, move on with your life. And then, you know, and then COVID happened and all that. And then a couple of years later, it just blew up. You know, and it was so unexpected. It won Sundance, then got a whole bunch of like awards, and then it got nominated for Oscars. And then, you know, through that, because of that, I went through this whole like, you know, did a bunch of podcasts and some interviews, and it was just so much fun from the beginning to the end. And, you know, I'm just so thankful to have been, you know, just a small part, but still to have been a part of that. I'm so thankful. And it was so fun. And it's one of my best memories.
That's amazing. Yeah. How was the audition process for that? What did they ask you to do?
Well, you know, what's interesting is I was connected to the director and the producer before that because they were auditioning for, remember the kid role, Alan Kim? The little boy. So they were auditioning for that role and they wanted people, they were looking for readers who spoke Korean. Mm. And so I got connected to them through a friend. And so they asked if I could come in for a couple of days and, you know, as a reader. And I was like, oh, sure, that sounds fun. And so I did. And then I did that for a few days with Steven, Isaac, the director and the producers. And then, you know, it was fun for a few days. And then, you know, I met Alan when they first met him, you know, and he was like, he was magical from the beginning. And then that was it. And I just kind of went about, you know, my way. And then a few weeks later, the casting director reached out and said, hey, there's actually this smaller role of this chicken farm worker. And they're actually wondering if you'd be interested in auditioning. And I said, Yeah. And so I did. And then a few weeks later, I got the call that I got the role. And then a few weeks after that, I was on a plane, you know? So
Oh
that's
my
kind of,
gosh.
yeah, that's how it came about. Yeah.
Wow, that's
I
amazing.
love that. Was that casting director Julia Kim?
Yes, Julia.
Yes, I know Julia. I've worked with Julia and auditioned for her, and she's
Oh,
awesome. Yeah.
yeah, she's lovely. She's wonderful. Yeah.
She's great. Okay, that's wonderful. That's lovely. So that, and then what I wanted to ask you with that happening, it sounds like as you were kind of making it, like did it feel like it was going to be something special, or did it just feel like a like on set? Like this, isn't that interesting thing? Like, I'm just curious. Like, you know, like you kind of mentioned it, but I always think that's such interesting when you're
Yeah,
so interesting.
it's really interesting because, you know, I wasn't there for the whole shoot, right? I was only there for a few days. And so I think maybe if you're part of the entire shoot, you know what this film is going to be. And it maybe you feel like, oh, there's something magical, there's something special. For me, having just spent a few days on set, it was absolutely lovely and wonderful. But I personally had no clue what this movie was going to end up like. You know, I had no clue. So, and you know, it's a small, like a smaller budget indie film. And so you kind of wonder, but I mean, if at that time you had told me, Esther, this is going to go all the way to the Academy Awards, I would have been a little bit surprised. I'd be like, oh, wow, really? You know, this small like indie movie all the way to the Oscars, you know, I think I would have been surprised. It was an absolutely lovely movie. I mean, shooting it, the cast, the set, everything, but I had no clue, honestly, that it was gonna go all the way like that. It was a very exciting surprise.
I love that. And I also thought of from the TV show The Office that the actress Phyllis in that show, she was a casting assistant that was reading with actors, and then she got cast in that part as Phyllis, you know. And it's such a lovely thing when you're around it and they think of you.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's such a great, you know, it's always wonderful to be thought of. You know, that's one of the reasons we volunteer our time, or you know what I mean,
Yeah.
or kind of help out with stuff like that, right?
Right. Yeah. It was great. It was I feel very very lucky, very blessed. I'm thankful.
Other than making that connection, did you find that like it helped with your analysis of your scene when you were doing the audition to kind of be in the room and kind of understand what they were looking for or any of the directions they were doing with the sun?
Yeah, you know, I had heard about the film that was, you know, that they were in pre-production for. And I was thinking like, oh, what a lovely, you know, kind of immigration story. But when I was on set, I really, it was like the spirit of all kind of like the, you know, immigrants that came before me, like the spirit of, I don't want to say my ancestors because they weren't my ancestors. My ancestors are still in Korea. But you know what I mean? Like this, that immigrant spirit, really just kind of weighed heavy on me when I was in Oklahoma on set in that dusty, hot, humid, smelly chicken farm because it just really hit me once again, you know, what people sacrificed and went through to kind of, you know, to move here to, you know, pursue the American dream. And you know, and I thought I was very familiar with immigrant history, especially Korean immigrant history. But I realized I'm actually mostly familiar with Korean immigrants who came to major cities like LA, New York, but I was not as familiar with the Korean immigrants who immigrated to the South, to farms, you know, and this still is happening to this day. I don't know if it's as common as back in the 70s and 80s, but yeah. But and so when I was there in Oklahoma, what was fascinating was I met current day real life chicken farmers because they were in the background of the scene. You don't really see them in the movie, but they were in the background and they were the ones who showed us how to handle the chicks to make it look like we're actually, you know, doing something.
Yeah.
And so during, you know, in between shooting, you know, we would sit around and they were all so fascinated to meet me and talk to me, you know, this Korean from Hollywood. But actually, I was more interested in them. Yeah. Like, how did they end up here in Oklahoma? Like, what is their background? And what's fascinating is, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, it was the more kind of the more poor, uneducated folks that immigrated over to the chicken farms. But nowadays, because, you know, it's so much harder to get a green card and yada, 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 even people with college degrees are actually sacrificing 7 to 10 years of their lives to come to work towards, you know, getting their green card. So it was like, it was honestly, it was a learning experience for me. It was a journey. It was, yeah. And so I think just being on set, just that kind of, you know, playing that role, like I really felt it. I didn't even feel like I was pretending, you know, I felt that heaviness of, you know, being there.
Yes, I feel like, Esther, like the hardest part is the audition, because when you're there, you're in the outfit, you've got the whole environment around you, you know what I mean? Like you are in it. Like, you know, it makes it like you don't have to imagine as much. It's like, this is like really happening. Like there's really like, you know, chicken poop all around here and it smells and it's hot. You know what I mean? Like you just feel that energy, you know what I mean? And that's that work and that history that you're talking about, right? I think that's going to be hard to do, like recreate in a one bedroom apartment, you know, with a ring light, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh right? My God. So. The audition, I mean, in general, I mean, you guys are actors, you know, so you're familiar. The audition is the hardest part.
Yeah, so hard.
Yeah. When I was doing the scene that I auditioned with, I mean, it just came so naturally.
Yeah.
You know, on set. Yeah.
I love that. Fast forwarding a little bit, you were on the show Partner Track. How did that come about? I'm curious to hear about that.
Oh, that was kind of a typical audition process. You know,
yeah. The
audition came in through my agent and I auditioned and I got it. Yeah, so it was, and it happened pretty quickly, actually. I think from the time I did my first tape,
yep,
to being pinned and then being told that I booked it, it was less than a month.
Oh, so, I love it when it goes fast. Mm-hmm. I love it when it goes quick.
I love it when it goes fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it happened pretty quickly, you know, and that was kind of the typical audition process. And then next thing I knew, like the next month, I was on a plane out to New York and I was flying back and forth for the next 4 or 5 months.
Oh, wow. Oh, so they shot it in New York, and it's on Netflix, right? Partner Track. And they shot in New York.
Yes. Wow. It was shot in New York, one of my favorite U.S. cities.
Yes.
And so it was like a vacation every time I went out there.
Isn't that the best? When you get to travel for work, I just think that, especially for acting work, it's just the best, right?
Oh, it's the so best. You know, the car service.
Yeah.
You know, first or business class.
Yeah,
you know,
you're pampered.
Yeah, the hotel. That I mean, it's the best. Yeah,
it's worth it. All the hard work we put in, that makes it worth
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
you get to the top of the mountain and you're like, yes, this is it. And then a bunch of hands pull you back down the mountain. You have to climb back up. All these little hands.
Long.
No, it doesn't
last long. I mean, Partner Track. We were really hoping for a season two.
Yep.
Because season one, it ended in a cliffhanger on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we were really hoping for a season two and then we didn't get it. So, you know,
gosh, I know. You know, that's
no more flying out to New York for now.
The, I just heard, I'm trying to think, there was a show that I loved on Netflix called Dark, and it was a German show. And after the creators of Dark, I'm trying to think, they made another show for Netflix that was like super, it was called 1899. And it was like super expensive, and they kind of did like Lost, where they had all these like mysteries and things that will be solved like in the next season, and then Netflix is like, you don't get a second season. So everyone that watched it was like, we don't know anything. They have like all these like things they had set up, I guess, and they're like, we thought we were gonna get a second season.
It's such a bummer.
Yeah.
It's such a bummer because even you're like, well, who does she end up with then?
Exactly.
You know? Like,
come on.
Yeah.
Esther, I'm curious to hear a bit about your transition into entertainment, because I think you know, just based on my research, it's kind of like you were interested in acting and then kind of got away from it for a while and then got back into it. And I think, you know, some people either kind of have thoughts or kind of dreams of doing that, or they're not always sure. So how did you kind of get into entertainment?
Yeah, so for me, it wasn't I was in it, went away, and got back in. I yeah. had a whole first career. I was in social work and mental health. So I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and that was my career for like 20 years. This is my seventh or eighth year of acting. So, wow, it's been a while. But I've always loved acting ever since I was a kid. I grew up in the Korean church. And so we did, you know, plays, you know, the Christmas pageant plays, all of that. So I grew up doing plays in school. I did, you know, drama class, drama club. I always loved acting. But even in college, actually, I took every theater class you could take without being a theater major. And the reason it wasn't my major was because it just was not allowed. You know, my parents were very typical kind of first generation Korean immigrant parents. And, you know, they were like, you don't need to, you know, go to Ivy League or anything, but you have to have a normal career. And, you know, it's like, we always joke that there's like five acceptable careers amongst first generation parents, like doctor, lawyer, teacher, pastor, whatever. And so, you know, when I was young, I didn't have the balls to just be like, well, screw you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go and be a bartender, support myself and act. I didn't have the balls to do that. And I did find this other career that I liked in mental health. And so I did that for like 20 years, but I was always that person where if ever I heard of an open casting call somewhere, mm-hmm. I would call in sick and I would go stand in line for like 5 hours and audition. So I've done that a few times.
Good for you.
Nothing really came out of it. Yeah, so then that was my life until 8 years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so that kind of brought my life to a standstill. Incidentally, I'm actually going through it again, which is why I have no hair.
But a really hip hat, yeah, which I like.
That's awesome.
You're working that hat. Looks good.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, so 8 years ago was my first time being diagnosed with breast cancer. And so, you know, my life kind of stopped for almost a year. And, you know, a couple of surgeries, double mastectomy, chemo, all of that. And then as I, you know, got done with treatment and I was like in recovery mode, and I was just kind of thinking ahead to, you know, what I wanted to go back to doing once I, you know, was done recovering. Mm-hmm. And I had some very good options because I had worked for Department of Mental Health for a long time. I was adjunct faculty at USC and, you know, LACC. And, you know, I had very good options to return to. But the one and only thing I could think of doing was, you know what, just once and for all, I just want to try acting. And, you know, at that time, you know, I was sick for almost a year. I'm bald. Like, who's going to say, no, Esther, you shouldn't pursue the dreams of your heart? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So everyone, including my family, my parents were like, yeah, okay, go for it. Have fun. And even my husband was like, yeah, go do that. And I think everyone just kind of thought, she'll do it for like 6 months, get out of her system and like go back to a normal job. Mm-hmm. But here I am like 7-8 years later. I am like deep in it. And like,
wonderful.
I cannot imagine not doing it anymore. So, you know, mm-hmm. I've been on pause again since November of last year. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a breast cancer recurrence, but I'm mm-hmm. okay. You know, we caught it early again. I'm so thankful. So, you know, I had another couple of surgeries, chemo. I'm almost done with radiation. So, you know, so I'm really excited to be like at the tail end of my treatment. And mm-hmm. I was super excited to like get back into things. Mm-hmm. And then the strikes happened. And now, you know, who knows what the heck is going on and when things are going to happen again. So anyways, it's all good. I'm, you know, anyways, that was kind of a long answer I ramble. So
no, not at all.
Please feel free to cut me off anytime. You could just look at me in the mirror, the view, and just go like this.
I'll like wrap it up. Esther, you've been talking too much on our podcast.
Yes.
Actually,
trust me, we've had some ramblers on this show. Yeah. You're not one of them.
And his name is John Ruby.
I can wax poetically for sure. Esther, I am curious though, because you kind of, you know, talked about, you know, you told us a little bit about that, and how has your journey, I guess, against breast cancer, how has that kind of changed your outlook, if it has? Or, you know, I'm just curious, you know, if it, you know, what that impact, how it impacted you.
You know, it's still something that I'm processing, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try not to get too emotional. Honestly, like I've always been, I was already kind of an optimistic person to begin with. And I think that's helped in this whole journey. If anything, it's really deepened my gratitude for just the simple things like waking up in the morning. You know, it's, you know, that it's such a cliche, but you know that saying, like, every day you wake up and you're alive and you're mobile and you're healthy is a reason to give thanks. And it's such a cliche, but if anything, you know, I don't know if my outlook has changed a whole lot, but if anything, that's what's really deepened. Just my sense of gratitude for just being alive. You know, they say that saying where they say a healthy man has many wishes and a sick man has just one. And I really felt that both times, 8 years ago and now. And so I'm just, man, every day I wake up and I you know, I've gotten into the habit of, when I wake up in the morning, I scan my body to see like how I'm feeling, if there's pain anywhere, and if there is, what the level is, because, you know, those are things that you want to note down to talk with your doctor about. And so, every day I wake up and I kind of scan my body and I don't feel any aches or pains and I feel pretty good. I'm just so thankful.
That's really beautiful.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. God, I didn't mean to get all emotional. But
no, that's great. I think your gratitude is definitely, I think, infectious too. Like I feel, just from the little bit of knowing you, how important that is in my life, and how I want to be more grateful in things. I mean, even with like you doing the reading for Minari to like all the way to this, like all the extremes, like you're always just, it seems like you're very happy and willing to be present. Oh, that's really beautiful. It's great.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's just, you know, it really puts things into perspective about, you know, what's important, what's truly important, in life. And, you know, because shit happens, right, in life. And it's about your perspective and how you're going to handle, you know, the stuff that's, you know, handed to you. And so I think, I'm just so thankful for, I don't know, I've always thought myself as a pretty strong, optimistic person, but I think going through this twice now, it's really kind of the grit in me. It's like, yeah, that grit is—it's cemented. You know, it's gonna take a lot to, you know, put me down with most things. So I'm taking in all the small things, big things to be thankful for, and you know, all that.
Thank you for sharing that, Esther. It's you know. To go through that twice, you know, our heart goes out to you, and the fact that you have that grit and that optimism, and, you know, so So, you know, we want you to be healthy and happy and
yes,
you know, all that. So it's funny because I think like you mentioned the word grit and resilience, and I think as actors we have to have that. And it's funny because people say a lot of times, well, how, you know, doesn't the rejection bother you? And I'm like, I don't even think about it. I'm like, I'm always on to the next one. So it's like, it doesn't really bother me because I'm just like, I just do it. You know, I mean, I guess if I really thought about it, it probably would. But what I've also thought about, Esther, is I think I am such a curious, striving person that I'm always like, when I look back, it's like, I look at the things that I wanted to do and it was always stuff that was a challenge, like stuff that came easy to me. I was like, I don't want to do that. You know what I mean? Like I think about that of like, you know, I was a German major in college, and the only class in high school I got a B in was German. Okay, so I get one B, and then that's what I major in. Doesn't make any sense.
Wait. Then, that was the only class you got a B in, meaning everything else was
A's.
Was A's.
Yeah, it was all A's. I was a smart. I know, I've gone downhill, Esther. I used to be smart. I used to be. But then, like, I loved basketball, and my freshman year I was 5'5", you know, but I loved basketball, so I was short. I mean, I've grown since then, late bloomer. But even acting, you know, I had no acting experience, and you know, moved out to LA, and so I think for myself, it's interesting, wanting to like challenge, wanting to like test that grit, wanting to stick in that perseverance, you know? And so when I hear you talk about that, I really can relate in a different sense, but just that I give you a lot of credit because it's not easy. And yeah. I think that, you know, that it's lovely that you're pursuing acting and you know, and doing that, you know,
yeah. So. Do you ever wonder like what's wrong with us?
All the time.
Oh man. I try to tell Corbin all the things that are wrong with him. He doesn't listen.
No, seriously, like I love acting and yeah. I will do this for as long as I can. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I'm just like, what is wrong with me? I mean, you know, it's like this anything else, right? Yeah. Any other career, yeah. You put in the time and effort, you're going to succeed.
Yes.
You know, you're going to make money.
Yes.
And this is like, yeah, the constant rejection that, you know, just the not.
Oh, every day, Esther, I think about being a real estate agent. I'm like, I can sell a house. Oh, I can get a 2% commission on a $2 million house. I can do that right now. I think
that would be a great real estate agent.
You know, exactly. Yes, yes. I think every actor almost would be an amazing real estate agent. But instead, we suffer through.
I know. What's wrong with us? Why can't we just be happy with putting this amount of time and energy into something that like we're actually going to be successful and make money in? What's wrong?
Because earlier you told us you flew first class to New York every other week or something, Esther. So you're like eating sushi there and shrimp and like fancy. Oh, probably God. Had orange ruffy there. You probably had slimehead fish. I know. I know how you eat.
Excuse me. I was flying first or business class. I don't eat orange ruffy. No orange ruffy for me. It's like bluefin tuna. Thank you very much. No, but the best is like, you know, before your flight.
Yes.
Because you have so much time before your flight because they drop you off. Mm-hmm. I my preferred airline is Delta. So car service comes and drops me off right in front of what's the Delta One, the special check-in where there's no line.
Yeah.
So you're checked in right away. And then you're literally from the time you're dropped off at the curb to the time you walk in to the lounge, it's literally like 10, 15 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. So you have all this time. And the best thing is all the free champagne. Oh. It's dangerous. And literally, you have like 2.5 hours to your flight. And unlimited alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love champagne. Like, I'm about to fly off to vacation / work.
Yes, exactly.
What's stopping me? And so there's been times that I'm like, okay, Esther, this is your fourth glass.
Yeah.
Rain it in.
Esther, you and my wife would get along. She likes champagne too. Yeah, you two would get along.
The best. Wait,
Esther, that makes me think. So We just flew back to Wisconsin with my wife and my son, who's seven, and we went through Denver both ways. And through my mother-in-law, we can get passes to the American Express Lounge. And for those that haven't been there, there's a really nice one in Denver. And once you get in, it's free food, it's free drink. Yeah. There's like Wi-Fi. There's all this, you know, great stuff. And so on the way out, it was really a pain. Our flight from Burbank got delayed. So then we were in Denver for like 4 hours. So we were in the lounge for a long time. So then we flew to Wisconsin. On the way back, the woman at check-in like recognized us. She's like, "You guys were just here like a week ago." We're like, "Yes, we were." And as we walked in, my son, who's seven, Esther, he like acted like he owned the place. He like just like walked in and strolled to like his couch, and he like going to get food. And I'm like, "What just happened? Like, wow, you know?" I mean, he acclimated so quickly is my point. You get so used to that, right?
So quickly. So quickly. That's so cute. I have a son who's nine.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing. It's like, you know, when he talks about, okay, so when are we going to try like Michelin star sushi? And like, I'm like, I did not eat sushi till I was in like high school, college.
Yeah,
He thinks like going to Sugarfish is like a Tuesday afternoon.
Right. And like, no, you did not understand. Yeah. No. Okay. Wait, Ezra, I want to transition a little bit, just jumping back. But I love this. What advice would you give to someone? Now you said it was 7-8 years ago. What advice would you give to someone who is, wants to get into acting? You said you were, you know, you volunteered as a reader. Was that through like a network, like, you know, acting class, like, you know, moving to one of the, like, what advice would you give someone that's interested in, you know, or new to acting?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because even though I haven't been in this that long, I've had people ask me for advice or, you know, people starting out or getting back in, or just people, younger people I meet on set.
Yep.
And, you know, I think one of the greatest gifts in life for me was, as much as I would have loved to have started acting when I was younger, I'm actually so thankful that I had a whole life before I started acting.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually one of the biggest pieces of advice that I give to, you know, young actors or even just older actors who are just getting back into it or whatever. Yeah. I tell them, you know, you're going to get so much advice on how to actually be an actor, you know, what kind of classes to take, the different, you know, methods, you know, coaches, all that, the business side of acting. I mean, there's like podcasts, classes, internet, there's all that stuff for that. But I think one of the most important things you can do for yourself is build a full life for yourself outside of the acting world. And I think because for me, having had this whole life before acting, I bring all of that into my acting life on set. You know, just dealing with different personalities, you know, just being confident and knowing who you are and, you know, and having that confidence to, you know, meet different people, deal with different people, you know when to say no, how to put down boundaries. And you know, especially as an actor, when you're first starting out, you know, you're not spending 40 hours a week acting, right? And so if you don't have a robust life in general, I can see why people go into depression, people turn to substances, you know, because you're just sitting around waiting and just perseverating on, you know, that one audition that, you know, you did and you didn't get, and you found out someone else got it, and you're just like thinking about, but if you're busy, if you keep yourself busy, number one, you know, you're not going to have that much time to perseverate on all the things that don't go right, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, especially coming from a mental health background, you could put me on any set with the most effed up type of people, and I will know how to handle myself, and I will know how to handle them, because I dealt with the craziest shit working for mental health. You know what I mean? I had, for years, you know, I worked in the jails, I worked in the courts, I worked in psych hospitals. You know, I had naked men masturbate in front of me like more times than I can count. So like, you know, I mean, like, it's really hard to faze me. Mm. So And, you know, in Hollywood, you meet all sorts of personalities, right?
Yeah, for sure. But, and Esther, if you ever want to press charges against Corbin for doing that, I am right there with you.
I wanted to say I'm sorry. I'm a lawyer. Because, you know, it's a strike right now. I need some money.
Yeah. There's not much there. Trust me, not a lot of money. The
connection's breaking up. I got to go.
That looks like a nice little pad you have there. You know?
It's rented. It's rented.
How much are those cars worth? I see some cars in the back.
He doesn't play them. They're like new. They're like new. He doesn't play them. So, Esther, I think that's great advice. I love that advice about having a life. And I think what I love about that and kind of yes and is such a great time right now for actors where you don't just have to be an actor. You don't have to just sit by the phone. I mean, I think, you know, for a long time that was kind of the way it was. And that's changed where you can be a hyphenate. You can do other things. You can be an entrepreneur. You can, you know what I mean? You could start a clothing line. You can, you know, there's social media. There's a lot of different things, you know, whatever those things are. And so with what you're saying, and they don't even have to be, they can be outside of that. And I think that's really, I think that's great. I think that's, and it's just funny when you were saying that, I was also thinking, how relevant that can be to a relationship or a marriage. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd never thought that before, but just this idea that, you know what I'm saying? That like, if you're just too kind of, it's important to have kind of this, know who you are, have this perspective. I think that's also important in a marriage. You know, I also think it's great to do some dating before you find, you know, that perfect person. You know, I'm married almost 10 years next week. But I enjoyed dating before, because then you kind of know what you like and don't like. And I think that's absolutely important too, right?
Absolutely.
I think
that's, I've been married 16 years. And, like you're in it, you're committed.
Yes.
My husband and I, we both, like, we have stuff we do together and we're all in. But then we also have very clear, distinct, separate hobbies too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important. Yeah.
I think that's great.
Because I think it's important to be like a whole person, you know, and that's what's going to make you a better actor too.
Yes.
You need to be a whole person with a whole life. And, you know, I'm not saying that you should not be all in with acting, but, you know, it's just finding that balance of, yes, be all in, do everything that you need to do, but also, you know, build a life for yourself outside too. So, you know, even if acting doesn't go the way you want for a while, like you still have like other pieces of joy in your life. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's important.
One of my favorite things to ask actors who have a partner, especially if they're not in the industry, is have they ever read with you? And how did that go?
Good question.
My husband is my reader.
Oh, really?
For audition.
Wow. And that's rare.
Yes. And he is a professional reader now. Ooh. Oh, but it took time in the beginning, I think he thought he needed to act.
Yeah.
As a girl, and he's not an actor. And so he would try to act and it would be so distracting.
Yeah.
And it's bad acting.
It is.
And it'd be like
schmacting. A lot of schmacting happening.
A lot of schmacting happening. Right. Yeah. So, and I'm like, honey, no, I like, thank you for your efforts, but you really don't need to act. Just read. Because that's what they do in the room anyways. Yeah. So like, don't be too loud, like take it down a notch.
Yep.
And just read, because that's what they do in the room anyway. So now, 8 years later, he is a pro.
We just Corbin and I just had auditions for a theater piece we're working on, and one of the auditions, the boyfriend or husband off camera was really acting his face off, and he was right next to the iPhone, you could tell, so it was really loud, and he was really going for it, and it was distracting. Mm-hmm. We didn't hold it against the actress, but it was like, oh my gosh, like
it's the first thing you notice.
They're trying, you know, they really want to do a good job for you, but they don't realize that, no, the best job you can do is just read kind of like a robot, you know?
Yeah.
I think readers sometimes think they're going to book the role outside of being on camera. They're just like, really, I'll put my heart in.
Esther did for Minari, so it worked out. Yeah. So, I mean, you know what I mean? She nailed it. But you're right, Corbin. I think, they think this is possible. Well, Esther, this has been lovely. We have one last section we like to get to, which is called
Your Best Bad Acting.
So we're going to send you a fun quote, which is in, if you look in the Zoom chat. Mm-hmm. And this is, This is from, probably not gonna, it's not like a super famous one. It's from, there was a Hulu show. There's a Hulu show called The Great. And this is Catherine the Great. And so the idea is you can have fun with this quote. You can do it big, do it small, accent or not. And the point is just to kind of have fun with it and have it be bad acting. And we might give you a redirect or just play with it. So.
Okay, so it's supposed to be bad acting.
It's supposed to be bad.
Whatever you like.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Bad acting.
Yeah.
Ever since I was a child, I felt like greatness was in store for me, like God himself has spat me forth to land on this earth and, in some way, transform it. Oh my God.
I like that. You guys can't see, but she did the hand gestures with jazz the hands. Spoon. Jazz hands. Okay, wait.
Overacting.
No. Okay, Esther, I need to see when your husband first read the same thing eight, nine years ago. Yeah, let's do it as your husband 8, 9 years ago. How would he do it? Yeah. This is going to be good. Oh my God. Yeah.
Ever since I was a child, I feel like greatness was in store for me. Like, God himself has sped me forth to land on this earth and in some way transform it.
Oh my God. That's where it was.
He would have done it 8 years
ago. That's amazing.
Oh, I've had that happen amazing. To me too. That's so good.
Esther. That was hilarious because I saw it. I was like, oh yeah. Yeah. And then you're like, sweetie, just take it down. And then does the exact same thing. You know, it takes like time and time until finally it kind of.
I read you loud and clear.
Oh, I got you. Exactly. It's like Homer Simpson. You're like, oh yeah. And then same thing.
It's like, no, that was great. But just emotion.
Slight note. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Esther, that was so great.
Thank you.
Esther, this has been lovely. Lovely getting to know you. Congratulations on your acting success. And thank you, you know, for sharing and opening up to us about, you know, your, like I said, your journey with breast cancer and, you know, we're wishing you the best with that too, because you're just a lovely person. And it's interesting. You talk about your first career and I can just tell from your energy. I feel so settled, Corbin.
Yeah,
you? I'm just like, oh, I could just sit here and like listen or just talk and have you listen. I can just tell you're like very present, which is lovely. Thank you so much.
This is so much fun. Thank you for having me.
We loved having you. This was wonderful, and we wish you much more continued success, and we're excited for what's to come.
Thank you, and same to you both. Thank you both. With this podcast, with acting, your theater stuff, all of that.
Well, we appreciate that. We'll take it. We'll hold on to it, and we'll give you some back. All right. Sound good? Awesome.
Sounds great.
All right. Thank you, Esther. Enjoy the rest of your day. We really appreciate you coming by.
Thanks, Esther.
Yes, thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the
Moon and Fox Eye Podcast.